My guest today is composer Samuel Holloway. Among many other achievements, Samuel's a former Mozart Fellow at Otago University. A few years ago took up a Civitella Ranieri Foundation Fellowship in Umbria, and he's currently Associate Director Artistic of the upcoming 2020 International Society for Contemporary Music, World New Music Days, which are going to be held in Auckland and Christchurch. NZ Trio is performing a piece by Samuel in their final concerts for 2019, so we thought that was the perfect excuse for a long overdue catch-up. Samuel, welcome. It has been a few years since we've actually talked to you.
Kia ora, David. I think a good number of years now.
So your day job, if we can put it like that, is academic program manager at Unitec, the School of Creative Industries. What sort of things does that involve?
So that's a role that I've held now for just around 4 months, so I'm still relatively new to it. I have been at Unitec for some time teaching into the music programs, but in the middle of this year I took up this new role, as you say, of academic program manager, looking after the art and design programs. And so it's a role that kind of has two parts to it, as I see it, or three parts, let's say. So it's about looking after the people. So the teachers, those who support them, and students. It's about looking after the programs, so making sure what we're teaching is the right thing to be teaching, that the programs are fit for purpose. And then also the kind of third bit is to be the conduit, I guess, or the kind of filter between upper management and the people on the ground.
Okay, so you're the sandwich. You're the one in between.
Yeah. Well, I think in a large organisation, in any large organisation, that dynamic between people charged with making big strategic decisions and people who are on the payroll and turning up to do, I was going to say all the hard work, but do the other very important bit. It's really important that's a strong, healthy relationship, that it goes both ways, that there's good communication.
It's a great thing that for them that they've got somebody such as yourself who has experience of it from the other side, from that teaching perspective.
Yeah, well, it's been interesting for me because obviously my background primarily is in music, and although my practice has tentacles beyond that. That's what my study was in, and that's where much of my energy has been focused in my adult life. So, I come to it partly as an outsider. Art and design pedagogy is not that I experienced as a student, but contemporary art in particular is a very strong interest of mine and something that I'm quite involved in for various reasons, and so it's a real pleasure to be able to work in that world.
Yeah. Well, we're going to talk a little bit later about the influence of visual art on your practice, but first I'm really interested in the fellowship you had in Umbria. This was in late 2016, the Civitella Ranieri Foundation Fellowship. You were essentially based in a 16th century Umbrian castle.
Yeah, I was. I think about it often, to be honest, but I was thinking of it recently because a photo popped up somewhere in social media reminding me that it was 3 years ago that I was there, and it feels like a long time.
It would do.
But look, that was a pretty magical experience. So I received an email one day, and this would have been about 4 years ago, saying that I had been nominated for a residency this foundation, and laid it all out that you went to stay in Umbria in a castle and you were fed every day and you went on tours and all sorts of things.
So you're not going to say no to that?
Well, it was inviting me to apply, and I thought it was spam. It did not seem like a real thing, but I did my research and applied, and was lucky enough to be selected. So I got to spend 6 weeks in this castle in Umbria, near Perugia, Umbertide is the small town mm-hmm. where the castle is located, with a group of, I think, 11 others from around the world, so other composers, including Olga Neuwirth, who's just had her opera Orlando performed by the Vienna State Opera.
Oh, wow.
The first opera by a woman to be performed by the Vienna State Opera. It's been in the news a bit, I think. John Oswald, who's famous it's called coining the term plunderphonics, which was a practice that he began, I think it was in the 1980s, which was around taking musical recordings and manipulating them.
Okay.
Fascinating composer. A number of others, artists, writers, and then as sort of guests of the director as well. So there was a lovely woman there who was an editor for the New York Review of Books, amongst other things. So really fascinating, interesting, intelligent people.
Being in that kind of environment with other sort of highly creative people, it always sort of sparks you to greater and greater things.
Well, the other nice thing about it was there were no expectations to do anything.
Okay.
So upon arrival, you were sort of instructed in a way that if you had been so busy that what you really needed to do to get your life in order was to answer all your emails, then, you know, I mean, I don't think that's what you'd want to do when you're in Umbria, but, you know, that was okay. So, you know.
What a wonderful thing to actually allow you to have, to just have space if that's what you really needed.
Yeah, well, I think it's a great model for how to really support artists, to trust them that they know what they need to do. And, yeah, really, really wonderful experience.
One other thing that we should talk about, Samuel Holloway, is your Associate Director Artistic of the upcoming 2020 ISCM New Music Days. This is a pretty big deal for New Zealand, but possibly one which not many people will have heard of.
Yeah, so the ISCM is a funny organisation. It's been around for a very long time, and I'm just trying to think off the top of my head how long. Oh, it was founded in 1922.
Okay.
There we go. And so since it began, it's travelled around the world, generally speaking, annually, presenting a festival with music from the members. So it was held in Sydney a number of years ago, and that was the first time I think it had come down to our part of the world, possibly even to the Southern Hemisphere.
Mm.
And yes, next year in 2020, it will come to New Zealand, partially in Auckland and in Christchurch. So there'll be members from the organisation visiting, and it's quite a extensive process, I have to say, where each member submits a number of works according to a call for scores, and then if the sort of rules are abided by, each member country has effectively the right to have a work performed. So it's you get a real sense of what's happening in different countries around the world, you know, a sense of the diversity of practice, some of which is interesting, some of which is, you know, perhaps more challenging artistically, but it's a fascinating experience to participate in these festivals.
Yeah, well, I'm sure we'll hear more about it closer to the actual event, which I think is in April, is it?
That's right, so in late April. So,
late April.
Prior to Anzac Day in Auckland, and then moving to Christchurch, where it also encompasses the Festival of the Asia Pacific Composers League.
Okay, so it certainly is a big deal, and it must be a big thing to be involved in the organisation of this.
Yeah, there's a number of people beavering away behind the scenes to make things happen. The director of the festival is Dr. Glenda Keem, who's, as I'm sure many of your listeners will know, the head of school at the University of Canterbury, the head of the School of Music. So on top of that, she is also directing this festival.
As if she didn't have enough to do already, yes.
Which is no small feat.
That's right. Look, Samuel, does experimental music get a bit of a bad rap sometimes? Because do you think that it's really that difficult for listeners to get into it?
That's a big question. Sure, I mean, some of it's difficult. And that's good. I don't think that's a bad thing. I'm not sure that the challenges really lie necessarily with the composers or with the listeners. I think the main issue we face, particularly in New Zealand, but I'm sure it's around the world, is the kind of failure of infrastructure to support new music. And, you know, that can be evidenced in a lot of ways here. You know, music is a complex beast. It can be expensive to put on. There's multiple pressures in terms of funding because of the way that money is spent on, you know, effectively historical performance practices. You know, you could argue that our national orchestra primarily focuses on that, and that's a huge amount of money. And that money is simply not spent on new music. I feel pretty strongly about that, and it's a very hard nut to crack.
It is, because the problem is, I guess, for an organisation such as the New Zealand Symphony Orchestra, is they certainly feel as if they have an obligation to perform music of contemporary composers, music of this place and of this time. And yet they, I guess, are worried that if they play too much of it, it may scare the horses and their box office might disappear.
You know, I'd like to think that they think they have more than an obligation. You know, if they genuinely want to be the National Orchestra of New Zealand, not just in name, but in practice, then they should want to actively perform New Zealand composers, much like, you know, Radio New Zealand Concerts should want to perform the music, to present the music of New Zealand composers.
I think in many of the, with many of the orchestral musicians and people involved in the orchestra that I've talked to over the years, I think that it is that they don't see it so much as an obligation as something they really do want to do. Yet somehow it doesn't seem to happen as much as we all might like.
Yeah, I mean, that's an interesting thing to think about. I mean, there's been some dialogue certainly behind the scenes involving some of our music organisations. I mean, dialogue's perhaps putting it in too nice a way, but there's been some communications, you know, about this. And, I mean, one of the messages that came back from the chief executive was that we all need to work on this together, and that's absolutely true. But if the will is there, then, as, you know, an organisation that's funded to, you know, a significant amount, they should get on and do it.
Well, let's hear a recording of a piece of yours in which they did get on and do it. Here's the New Zealand Symphony Orchestra with a work of yours called Hauptstimme. was a piece called Hauptstimme by Samuel Holloway, my guest, and it was played by the NZSO, conducted by Hamish McKeach. Look, Samuel, I mentioned that we were going to get back to the subject of your interest in the visual arts and how that affects your music. I wonder if in some ways you as a musician and contemporary artists working in their field are sort of working towards the same kind of aims and same kind of concerns, but just using their own different genres to get there, if we can put it that way.
Yeah, that may be true. I mean, I think,
I'm not really sure how to answer that.
Answer it with no, I mean.
No, I mean, I think it's true to a point. I guess, you know, in terms of my learning about how one might go about writing music, that went in a particular direction. Mm-hmm. Certainly, there was a focus on, you know, how to deal with the musical materials, and that's very important. Perhaps one thing that I should have learnt from music and didn't, but have learnt from the visual arts, so however that's happened, is, I guess, to think about the broader context. So the idea that, you know, a work of music, like any work of art, is it doesn't exist in isolation. Yeah. It exists in a context, a historical context, in relationship to other pieces of music, that it also relies on relationships between people. It took me a while to come to terms with all those facts, that I wasn't just sculpting musical materials to create, you know, a thing that sounds, but something in a way that's much more complex than that.
Mm. You, as we say, you have been influenced by visual art, and you've actually worked with visual artists in collaboration as well.
Mm. Yeah, so I've had a few opportunities to work with artists. Most recently, I've been working again with the artist collective Et Al on a small project that was realised in October in a small gallery actually at Unitech. And this was a work called New Upright Piano. So it built on a number of previous works called Upright Piano that I'd created with the collective, first in 2013 and then again in 2015. Now, that first iteration of the work was in a show which included Michael Padukofi, and, of course, he's someone who has worked with the piano as a form, both in terms of the very elaborately carved work that he presented at the Venice Biennale in 2011, I think it was, but also with these large bronze sculptures that have bulls standing on top of them. Mm. There's one outside the Christchurch Art Gallery. And one of those was present in the space when this work was first made with Et Al in 2013. And in contrast, you know, to this beautifully realised bronze grand piano, we had this ratty old upright, which we modified, painted, and created a score which was realised in various ways. So it had a life as a kind of a sculpture or installation, but it also could be sort of made alive via a performance, and that's had a number of performances now.
And it also showed at the Auckland Art Gallery, I think?
That's right. So as part of the, it was a Chartwell collection show, Shout Whisper Whale in 2017 at the Auckland Art Gallery, and it was presented there. And again, there were a number of realisations of the work. And in this new work that we made just recently, took a slightly different approach in that I had a found score which we modified, but it was my first Suzuki Piano School Volume 1 score. So from childhood, back age 6, I think it was, when I first started learning the piano. And I recently found this original score and we, you know, annotated and redacted it in various ways. But a really nice thing to work with. Of course, Suzuki was interested not in music teaching for its own sake, but also because he thought it had a kind of an ability to foster, you know, good moral character in people. So there were lots of interesting reasons to take this piece of my own history and work with it.
But it's interesting that as well as the musical aspect of it, there is a sort of conceptual aspect to it, which is something that we do encounter so often in the visual arts now.
Yeah, and, you know, in a way, I think, you know, to generalise greatly, that possibly composers need to do that a little bit more. So think beyond what is this going to sound like, and think about everything else that attaches to the work.
Yeah. Look, your work that's going to be performed by NZ Trio is a piano trio, obviously, which I think was first composed in 2005, and this is called Stapes. Is that the right pronunciation for it?
That's correct, yeah.
Yeah. So tell us about that. First of all, the name.
So the stapes is one of the three bones of the ear, along with the malleus and incus, the middle ear. So these bones have the function of receiving sound waves, basically, and transmitting them into the brain, where they can be understood or not, or responded to, registered perhaps. And back in 2000, and I think it was 2005, I made a series of three pieces, each named after these bones of the ear.
Mm-hmm.
So Stapes was a piano trio. There was a trio for clarinets and a mixed trio as well. And I was lucky enough with this trio, Stapes, that I submitted it for performance at the annual Nelson Composers Workshop, which is held every year in Nelson, run by the Composers Association, and is now quite an institution. I think it's heading towards 40 years of happening. And that year I was lucky enough that the NZ Trio were going to be there, and they played this work, which, you know, has some challenges to it. They kind of picked it up from there, played it again, and have subsequently over the last, well, coming up 15 years, played it many times.
And coming up to it again, how do you react to your own past compositions, such as this one? Are you tempted each time you hear that it's going to be performed to get out the score and make a few changes here and there?
This piece I've happily left behind. I mean, the short answer is no.
When you're done with it, you're done with it.
Yes, yeah, and that's not always, I think, a good thing for the piece, in a sense, in that, you know, taking more time to refresh and revise could result in what is arguably a better work. But it's just not something that I've ever done, for whatever reason. And, you know, it does mean that these works are very much kind of time capsules. They capture a certain way of thinking about things at a particular moment.
And that can be a good thing.
And, you know, that I think is potentially a positive, yeah.
Yeah. All right, well, I've actually got a recording of the NZ Trio lined up to play it very shortly. Are there any clues you can give us, or any ways into the work, things we should listen out for, or any kind of description of the work that might help us to hear it?
Well, sure. I guess
I put you on the spot here. I'm sorry.
No, that's...
I should have prepared you for it earlier.
You know, in a past life, I probably would have said, well, we'll just let the work speak for itself and I'm not going to say anything. But certainly I was thinking about this ensemble of the trio and how to make it work. Having, you know, two string instruments and a piano, how do they fit together? So there's a sense in which the instruments work both together at various times, and so their sound kind of coalesces as one. And then at other times they seem to be quite ferociously working perhaps against one another, certainly not together. And overall, I guess it kind of builds towards a kind of an outburst, which might be seen as a kind of frustration about how to get it to say something. So I was really, at the time, thinking, what am I actually doing with this, and how is it possible to express anything at all? So there's a kind of struggle around that that's in there.
Well, Samuel Holloway, thank you very, very much for coming in and letting us have a bit of a catch-up and telling us a little bit about this piece. And I'll give details of the NZ Trio performances of it very shortly. But Samuel Holloway, thank you very much. Here is Samuel's piece, Stapes, and it's played by NZ Trio. That is the piano trio Stapes by Samuel Holloway, my guest this afternoon, and it was played by NZ Trio. That work, as well as music by Frank Bridge, Charles Ives and Shostakovich and others, is going to be performed in two concerts coming up soon. Tomorrow at the Mairangi Arts Centre on the North Shore at 7 o'clock, and then on Sunday at 6 o'clock at the Auckland Art Gallery. Thanks once again to Samuel Holloway for catching up and telling us a little bit about that piano trio Stapes, the reference being to one of the bones in the middle ear.